Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for tuning in tonight, or wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening. Hope you're hungry, because we have a lot to chew on during the next few hours. In the second half tonight, a story 45 years in the making. It harkens back to the early days of what we now call the alien abduction experience. Two friends and co-workers in Mississippi went out to the Pascagoula River to do some night fishing and say they were taken aboard some kind of ship by some truly weird-looking beings, then were cut loose a while later. When their story got out, it caused a media stampede, and both men had some trouble dealing with the consequences of this tale. Charles Hickson, the older of the two, later wrote a book about it, and it still ranks as one of the best-known alien encounter stories of all time. The second man, Calvin Parker, who was much younger, didn't want to talk about it from the beginning and has somehow stayed out of the limelight for the last 40 years or so. He's now written a book about the Pascagoula encounter, but also some other strange experiences that came as part of the same package. And we are pleased to welcome Calvin Parker to Coast for the first time ever. He joins me 2 hours from now. First, though, a massive and unprecedented study of what we generally call experiencers. We're not talking about people who just see or come into contact with UFOs, UAPs, UAVs, whichever acronym works for you, or with alleged alien beings, but a much larger universe of anomalous or paranormal experiences. Out of body, near death, ESP, remote viewing, precognition, ghosts, creatures, angels, spirits, spontaneous healings, and more. You know, I've often asked on this program whether there might someday be a unified theory of weirdness that somehow ties all of this together, somehow ties it together under the same umbrella, some kind of common link, a central thread that runs through all those different phenomena. And now maybe there is. This study was done under the banner of FREE, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences, co-founded by the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell, astronaut and scientific pioneer. The organization has cast the widest possible net with input from more than 4,000 experiencers from all over the world, with the results that have been analyzed and interpreted by a prestigious group of scientists, academics, and researchers. And what they've come up with is not only enlightening, but I'd say encouraging, and I think we can all use a little encouragement these days. Two of the principal figures in the FREE organization join me in a few minutes to talk about their work and these new findings. Dr. Rudy Shield and Ray Hernandez have been my guests on this program in the past, and they always bring it. This will be good. So by now, maybe you've heard there was another mass shooting today, this time at a video game competition this afternoon in Jacksonville, Florida. 2 dead, 9 wounded. The shooter took his own life. He was one of the competitors in this event. And I guess we'll all lament this and then move on from it until the next one, which will probably be sometime this week. Also out tonight, a story from the godfather of coral, an Australian scientist who earned that nickname over 70 years or so. He spent his entire life studying coral reefs. He says the world's reefs are in big trouble, that they're on the verge of collapse because the ocean is getting warmer. About a third of all marine life on Earth is dependent on coral reefs, so he is predicting we are standing on the edge of an abyss. And I know for a lot of people, this is not an acceptable topic. It's way too touchy. And I don't want to get into a debate about the causes of what's happening. I'd just like to know if it's too late to turn it around or if there's anything we could do to fix it. Just something to chew on as we head into some conversations about matters of a global nature in this first hour. On a much lighter note, today is National Dog Day. National Dog Day. So get out an extra biscuit for your pooch. Take him to the park and toss a frisbee. Maybe you want to wait till morning to do that. You don't want to be out lurking in the park in the dark at night. Our webmaster, Greg Bishop, and I have pulled together an assortment of items and oddities. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast website among the stories tonight, a piece about why a lot of people love their dogs more than they love other humans. You know, we can tisk it all we want, but you know it's true. You probably agree with it if you owned a dog. Take a look at the story when you get a chance. Also, remember the TV show? Of course you do, Unsolved Mysteries. Robert Stack was the host. We have a story there on the website about unsolved mysteries, actual unsolved mysteries from that show that are still unsolved. I looked at the list. I remember a few of these shows and stories, and I think you'll be interested in checking it out. Also, a new study claims that marijuana contains alien DNA, DNA from some other star system. I don't use this stuff. I don't advocate people use it, but I'll just say I'm not surprised. Also, a story about reading, what we read, what we don't read, how we read it, and what it all means to our brains. I don't want to give away the punchline, so check that out for yourselves. That and more in Knapp's News. While you're on the website, you can check out how to become a Coast Insider. Membership gives you access to a vast archive of previous programs. You can listen anytime you want, as often as you want, on just about any device. It costs pennies a day. Other monthly goodies as well to subscribers. You can also subscribe to George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief, which covers many topics similar to what we do here on radio. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and cat. And even though it's National Dog Day, you could be nice to the cat as well. Put on a pot of Joe, slide out of those clothes and into the silky jammies, plop down in a comfy spot, turn down the lights, and turn up the radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Beyond UFOs, the science of consciousness and contact with non-human intelligence. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. As I mentioned briefly a moment ago, for a lot of years now, we have talked on this program, when I'm here, about the search for a unified theory of weirdness, a missing link between different aspects of what we call paranormal. And, you know, my interest was kindled more than 20 years ago because of a strange place known as Skinwalker Ranch and this vast expanse of truly anomalous stuff that happens there over many, many years. It's like a Grand Central Station of the unusual, a paranormal Disneyland. And we wondered, the people who've researched it and me, is that place trying to tell us something, that somehow these things are all connected? UFOs, aliens, creatures, poltergeists, tricksters, crop circles, and more. And the answer, according to this massive new study, is yes. Free is the organization. Edgar Mitchell, whom I was proud to have known, kickstarted the effort, kickstarted the organization, co-founded it, and he has left it in good hands. Ray Hernandez is an experiencer himself and a co-founder of Free, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Experiences. He is currently employed as an attorney with the U.S. Department of Treasury, so make sure your taxes are in order if you're going to listen tonight. Dr. Rudy Schild is emeritus astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and is editor-in-chief of the Journal of Cosmology. He studied comets and planets and asteroids and solar systems and believes that other civilizations must have emerged and become much more advanced than our own. And because of that, his exploration has led to deeper understanding of the nature and purpose of life, which I'm encouraged by that research. Rudy and Ray, great to have both of you back.
Thank you, George.
Ray, I'm going to start with you. I have to tell you, the book, the title is Beyond UFOs, The Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence, Volume 1. It's massive. It's like 600 pages, and I'll admit right off the bat, I haven't finished it yet. I'm still wading through it, but I think that's a good thing because there's no way we could cover all that's in this anyway. I was really blown away by the findings of the study and the surveys. And it says Beyond UFOs in the title. It's not really about UFOs. It includes them, but it's not really the focus. Ray, you've been hinting that this was coming for a long time, and now here it is.
Yes, George. First of all, it's 820 pages long.
Oh, good Lord.
And we have a who's who of co-authors for the various chapters. And there's one fellow individual from Las Vegas there, Dr. John Alexander, who wrote a chapter titled Phenomenon Without Borders. And the theme of that topic is that all of these phenomenon are all interrelated, that they have no borders, that they shouldn't be separated, that they need to be studied as one phenomenon. And that's a hypothesis that was shared not only by Dr. Edgar Mitchell, but also by Dr. Rudy Shields, Dr. Claude Swanson, who's a PhD physicist from Princeton, member of our board, Dr. Dean Radin, the lead scientist at the Institute for Noetic Sciences, and most of the academic professors in the field of parapsychology, as well as all of the members of the three board of directors. So our book basically is the first attempt ever to try to document that all of the various, what we are calling the contact modalities, those are the different ways that humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence via out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, UFO contact, channeling, remote viewing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, ghosts and spirits, that all of this is actually one phenomenon, and that the key to understand this phenomenon is commonly called consciousness. Edgar and Dr. Rudy Shields, they are adherents of the quantum hologram theory of consciousness and physics. And their position is that the key to understand the true nature of our reality is to be able to look at the informational storage mechanisms of our cosmology. And Rudy, I'm sure, can talk much more about
that. I'll ask Rudy. Ray, I want to come back to you in a moment because it was an experience, a personal experience that you had that sort of led to your association with these folks. That's a great story by itself. Dr. Shield, could you tackle consciousness and sort of for a general audience, not for scientists, what it is, why it is the umbrella that may unite all these different kinds of things that we call paranormal or unknowns? Do we know what consciousness is and where it comes from?
Very good, George. Thank you. What we know is that there are many things that our academic community does not like to talk about because they can't speak with authority. And the free survey shows that they all seem to be interrelated, that people, individuals who have one of these contact experiences are likely to have likewise also have had more than many more. So if you have seen a unmanned aerial craft or a UFO, it's likely that you become interested in near-death experiences and remote viewing and telepathy and many other of the topics that universities don't know how to deal with. So we're trying to describe a unifying theory that says that the reality of all of these anomalous phenomena lies in the structure of matter within the universe itself. We're trying to put forward that position and then bolster it by applications to specific things like astrology. If I may give an example at this time, what we notice is that we're just past the phase of full moon. And to many people, full moons, also to many animals, the time of full moon is a time of unusual mental activity or extraordinary experiences. And we've always wondered why that should be true. And in fact, astronomers have gone so far as to deny that there is any relevance or any meaning to astrology, but it turns out that maybe we've been too quick to take that position. The traditional argument is that, look, in the solar system, the mass of the planets is dominated by the sun. The Earth is only 1/1,000,000th the mass of the sun. And so how can planetary alignments involving the Earth and Mars and Jupiter and Saturn, Venus, how can they affect our lives? And the newer idea says that, well, the alignment that's underway, or the quartet, or the quadrature that's under, or the trione that's underway, lines up our universe with the cosmic intelligence in such a way that some emotional content leaks into our solar system space and others is disfavored. These are coherence phenomena in the quantum world, and we'll probably talk about that as time goes on. But that's just to show that there's another way of looking at our universe, employing the quantum hologram or the description of everything as described in a lower dimensionality, and the fact that the mind can tap into that then causes us to recognize the influence of planetary alignments as being a natural application.
Rudy, you are the emeritus astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center. Could you be talking about this on this program if you were still there? I'm sorry, I don't know enough about your background to know if you were talking about it while you were there.
I was developing a schizophrenic personality. When I write scientific papers, the papers are authored by Rudolf E. Schild, PhD. When I'm talking to you, I'm Rudy Schild. So that way, I hope to make it possible, if people are of good spirit, make it possible for people to overlook the fact that what's he doing talking about all of these stuff, all this stuff that the academia is not prepared to discuss.
Well, what you put together here is certainly a lot for academia to chew on and to evaluate. Ray, you had a personal experience that I think you shared with us once before the program, certainly would fall in the category of paranormal. What I found, I don't remember hearing this part of the story, though, is that because you had that personal experience, you, your wife, your dog, it led to your association with all these folks, and it was like dominoes falling in a row. Tell me that.
Yes, and Rudy can verify that. This can only be classified as a case of high strangeness. Also, my daughter has had these paranormal experiences and also has seen an up-close UFO craft, as well as my wife, numerous times. Just very, very quickly, we had in 2012 an incident where our dog was completely healed from a total paralysis. We were going to be putting her, we were going to be euthanizing her with our vet. My wife was praying all night. And then the very next day, this energy being appeared in our living room and healed her. It put me to sleep. It made my wife disappear in front of me. And then when I woke up 45 minutes later, my wife was celebrating in the middle of the living room, yelling, "The angels cured her, the angels cured her." And the dog was running around, totally healed. And then about 2 months later, my wife saw a big, gigantic UFO outside her house at night. She then had numerous sightings of UFOs very up close. And then 6 months after that initial experience, my daughter and I and three other adult friends then saw a huge, gigantic UFO. And then after that experience, I had what can only be classified as a diverse array of paranormal experiences. And then in May of 2013, which is approximately 15 months after the original experience, I was driving in my car to go into downtown Miami, and all of a sudden I'm not in my car. I'm in what I now call a matrix reality, where I was shown the contact modalities. I was shown all the different ways that humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence. I was inside a huge spinning wheel, and inside each of the different spokes of the wheel was near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, UFO contact with ghosts, remote viewing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I was told that these are all one phenomena, and that humans are understanding them as separate, but it's all one, and that the key to understanding it all was consciousness, which is the very fabric of our reality. And then that same afternoon when I got home, and then I was plucked right back into my car without any time gone. I thought I was gone for a half an hour, but I was put right back in the car listening to the same exact radio interview that didn't skip a beat. And then that afternoon, I got an email from Mary Rodwell, one of our co-founders, and it said, "Dear Ray, I'm sorry that I'm responding to an email that you had sent me 6 months ago but it just appeared on my computer today. And so then I told Mary everything that happened over the last 6 months, and why did this thing appear, you know, that very same day that I had this experience. And then the very next day at 9:30 in the morning, Dr. Rudy Shields called me at my home, and I had no idea who he was. And we spoke about 90 minutes about my experience, and he told me that the quantum hologram theory of consciousness can begin to explain.
I got to stop you there, Ray. We're going to have to take a break. We'll pick up the story on the other side, talking with Ray Hernandez and Rudy Shield of Free about this massive new study beyond UFOs. Back in December of 2017, the UFO world was kind of rocked when these videos were released. The New York Times put them out first. To the Stars Academy was responsible for getting them released from the Pentagon. The Tic Tac video, the encounters between U.S. military warplanes and these craft of unknown origin. And of course, we suddenly learned through the New York Times reporting about a program called ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. That word threat was of concern to a lot of people who heard it. We subsequently learned there was another study, another title for a program that involved the words weapon. And I think a lot of people who were watching the UFO scene were concerned that maybe this was leading towards some kind of a giant Department of Defense spending program that would inflate the idea of ETs or aliens as some sort of a threat to our planet, and we needed to spend a lot of money to get prepared for it. And those are justifiable concerns, I would say. But how does that fit into the vision as explored in this new book, Beyond UFOs, Volume 1? We're going to get into that with Ray Hernandez and Rudy Shield right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Before the break, Ray, you were telling us about a series of what you'd call paranormal events, very strange encounters that you and other members of your family had over a series of a period of a couple of months, and how that sort of resulted in you hooking up with all the folks who would become your colleagues in the establishment of the organization you're now here representing. I mean, you get this email that same day as your out-of-body experience from this researcher in Australia, I think it is, and then the next day you get a call from Rudy, and the day after that, you're in the home of Dr. Edgar Mitchell talking about what had happened to you, right?
That's correct, and Rudy can verify that. Now, I believe 2 years ago when you asked Mary, she verified that story as well.
Yes.
And it was Free actually got started at the home of Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Rudy gave me his telephone number the very next day after I spoke with Rudy. That same afternoon, I gave Edgar a call, and then he invited me to his home. Apparently, Rudy had also communicated with him. And then I spent most of the next day at Edgar's home. He only lived 90 minutes away. And then he told me the importance of having an academic research study to study the UFO-related contact phenomenon, because no one had ever done that. And so then shortly afterwards, we began getting numerous PhD academics interested in working with us to undertake this research project. So I'm sure Rudy can verify the whole history of what I just told you.
Rudy, I want to ask you a different question. It's about ATIP. And there is a brief mention of ATIP in the new book. But when that news broke last December, eyebrows were raised when they see the word threat in the acronym for ATIP and then weapon in AUSAP, which is a different acronym, and understandably so, that the military would view these unknowns as a threat because, you know, I think that the fear was it leads to some big spending program and we're going to wipe them out of the sky as soon as we see them. As it was explained to me by some of the people who worked not only in the program but in getting it off the ground and getting the money for it, you almost had to sell it that way. I mean, I was glad that the Pentagon continued to study UFOs, always believed it to be the case because it was necessary. And some of the people who were responsible for getting the program off the ground had said, we need to find this, what's going on. It could lead to all kinds of discoveries for us, not just the idea that we need to defend ourselves against hostile alien invaders. Give me your take on that news when you first saw it, and has your view changed at all since then?
I'd love to. Thank you. I likewise saw the news story myself and thought about the fact that there's something I don't like here about this. And just as you say, I noticed that the word threat had been consistently used throughout the news release. And I said to myself, well, take a look at this. Here we have a report that implied radar detections from the F-18A Growler, our frontline aircraft carrier-launched jet. And obviously, they have many other things that they could use to reveal the nature of the alien presence. Going to the military means that all information sources are controlled. There was no press corps coverage of this event. There was nobody who was able to put anybody on the line that was advocating for this. We didn't get fair analysis of the use of that word threat, and that troubled me, and I mentioned to my wife that I found that troubling. I think that there is plenty of other evidence. For example, the Phoenix Lights incident, that's probably 10 years ago now, and the Chicago O'Hare incident, and other things like that that the Department of Defense could have used to illustrate its point. And instead, we're left with ridiculous explanations like, it was a hole punch cloud at O'Hare Field, and, it was some jets that were firing some flares at the nearby mountains, and that's what people may have been responding to when all of the thousands of phone calls hit the TV stations.
Well, are you at all encouraged that we now have some, at least former defense people coming forward, that a couple of videos have been released, that at least the Pentagon has acknowledged it had a program instead of lying about the Project Blue Book being the end of it back in 1969? I am encouraged that someone was still collecting information and taking a look at it.
I am likewise, but I'm also concerned that I don't really want the military to be alone in this. I think that there are many organizations like the MUFON organization that are doing this general kind of research by themselves. And why aren't they being contacted? Why aren't their files being combed over? And why aren't people who are generally interested in this topic being consulted? Why is this all being done with military secrecy?
Well, I think some of that stuff that you're calling for is underway, but maybe that's a topic for another program. Ray, I want to come back to you. Can you describe the parameters of this study? You had told us before when you were here, it was part of the reason you were on the program was to get people to respond to your survey, to send information, to correspond and have a back and forth. How many people did you contact, over how broad an area, and what was the general response?
Well, this was a team effort, as you're well aware of. Throughout the years, we've had more than 25 members in our board of directors, and you probably know half of the individuals on our board. So we publicized it via hundreds of radio interviews over a three-year period. We advertised it to over 500 Facebook sites on a weekly basis. We compiled an email mailing list of over 5,000 names, pretty much anyone that I had ever written a book on ufology or the paranormal organizations, et cetera, all of the MUFON leadership, for example. So it was widely disseminated all over the world. And what we wound up with was 4,200 individuals that participated in our three surveys from over 100 countries. And this is just in the English language. And we're also doing the surveys in several other languages as well. The most prominent one is in Spanish. And we have almost 800 responses to our Spanish surveys. Now, our surveys, we took 9 months to develop. The research methodology, and this is a team of retired PhD academics together with lay researchers like Kathy Martin, Mary Rodwell, like Leo Sprinkle, Claude Swanson, Rudy Edgar, Dr. John Klima, who's one of the world's leading academics on the paranormal, who also investigated the ranch on behalf of Mr. Bigelow as well. So it was an expert team that developed this research methodology, which was comprised of over 800 questions, quantitative questions, and 70 open-ended questions. The importance of our research study, George, is that no one had ever done this before. What you had was you had literally thousands of individuals that had written their own books, like the next guest that you're going to be coming up in the next section. So you literally had thousands of people writing their own books, individuals getting information via hypnotic regression, but you never had any comprehensive, systematic collection of unified data. And we were the first one to do that. And what we found out is from our data is that much of it contradicts what is circulating in the field of ufology and totally different radical findings. And why? Because it had never been done before.
You know, I remember that NIDS under Mr. Bigelow years ago did a national, I think it was a Gallup poll survey in which they had a control question. They were seeking out people who had been had these anomalous experiences. They had a control question in there to sort of that was nonsensical to sort of weed people out. And anybody who responded positively or in the affirmative, they discarded the results from that. Rudy, do you have any kind of control in this study for that? What I was wondering is, and you discussed the possibility of bias in the results, is it possible that people who've had more positive experiences when they've encountered the unknown would be more likely to respond to a survey as opposed to people who were frightened and don't want to talk about it?
That's a good point, and we have discussed these kinds of biases among ourselves. We don't go much into that within the book pages themselves because it's too tenuous, and it just brings in so many dimensions of human existence that it's just something that we don't know how to talk about. It is a problem always in survey work that you have to be very careful about how the sample was selected. And in this case, as Ray Hernandez describes, they were rather self-selected. And we were forced to do that to some extent because it is quite a job to complete this survey. It might take up to a couple of hours, say, to do all of the survey work that we're asking people to do. But bless their hearts, there are many people who are now dedicated to the truth and to knowledge and have been willing to donate their time to this project.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll ask you first, Rudy first, then Ray. Give me some of the highlights that jump out at you from this, because for me, it was the idea that even though it's beyond UFOs is the overall title of the book, it's not about UFOs. You found that overwhelmingly the people who had had a UFO type experience, an alien encounter, whatever type of alien it was, that they'd had other anomalous experiences as well that came hand in hand with it. Rudy first, then Ray, what jumps out at you from the data?
Exactly the same thing, but I would add a twist to it. In the first place, yes, it's true that we selected in the survey people who had reported what is sometimes also called close encounters of the fifth kind, that is, encounters with non-human intelligences, but not necessarily associated with a UFO craft. Very often, these are entities that enter walls and rooms of people's homes, entities that they see as clouds in the sky that then are speaking to them, or what children often see is little amusing animals, almost like Disney cartoon critters, and they seem to have messages for the children among us. So there are many ways that the universe has found to interact with us, and we take the point of view that it's not about whether spacecraft are real and people are visiting us from other planets. We take it for a given that that probably is happening, and what does it matter if it is literally or in some other guise? And we're asking the question then, well, just what do these people say from they've learned from these encounters? And what they say is, among important things, they found it a positive and transformative experience. That means that they said they wouldn't want not to have this happen in their lives. And you may know that in the early days of this subject, everything was expressed in terms of the trauma of these fifth encounter experiences, but it seems as though the phenomenon itself has morphed. Maybe the people that are trying to contact us have learned some tricks, and maybe we've learned some tricks, and the net result seems to be that people now see this as primarily transformative and positive experiences. That, to me, I think, was the outstanding result.
Ray, several times in the book, there are mentions about Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and some of the work they had done with abductees, the traumatic experiences that were reported, the negative spin that a lot of the abductees had shared with those researchers. And this takes a completely different spin on the whole thing. It's that most of the people report either positive or neutral kinds of experiences. And I wanted to know if that is consistent with your own life and what else jumps out of the data at you.
Well, first of all, 38% of the individuals stated that in the very beginning of their experiences, they viewed it as negative. But then what we also determined was that the vast majority of these individuals were having numerous additional experiences after the initial one. The vast majority of people were more than 10 experiences. And we grouped the categories by the number of experiences. And what we found out was that the more experiences these individuals had, the more positive they viewed it at the now when they took the survey. So that 38% was reduced all the way to depending 10% to 5%, depending on how the question was phrased. So the nature of the experience changed and the perception of the experience changed. And in terms of the major findings, I would say was that the overwhelming number of individuals that took our surveys believe that their overall experience totally transformed their life in a positive way. In terms of the nature of the experience, very few of them now, upon reflection, view their experiences as negative. The other aspect, as Rudy mentioned, was that we borrowed almost 70 questions from Dr. Kenneth Ring's book, The Omega Project, which is a quantitative survey that he did in the early 80s, where he compared 85 people who had near-death experiences with 85 people who had abduction experiences. And what he concluded was that 85% of both groups had major transformative changes towards the positive. And so we borrowed those questions, we applied it to our surveys, and we came up with the same exact number. Approximately 85% of these individuals turned into a new human. All of a sudden, they became more loving, more caring for each other, more ecological. They didn't care about material things. They became much more spiritual. Material wealth was not important in their life. It was a total transformation of the person. So that was number two. The number three is what you had mentioned earlier, was that the overwhelming type of experiences that these people were having were not physical. They were actually paranormal and psychic. While there were some physical aspects to the contact phenomenon, like seeing a UFO or seeing a being, or even having a medical inspection by these type of beings in an abduction type or related type of situation, the overwhelming number, like 95% of these experiences, were paranormal in nature. We also discovered that even people, first of all, the abduction scenarios was only one-third of the people that were having these contact experiences. Two-thirds of the people have seen UFO and had contact with non-human intelligence, but never had an abduction. So all of these previous studies that just focused on abductions, they were missing two-thirds of these individuals.
I think that's a good point. But I mean, you know, a lot of the experiences that we've heard about on this program and in interviews that I've done are certainly don't sound positive, at least on the surface. I mean, people are taken against their will. They're taken on these crafts. Some of them report certain kinds of medical procedures that they certainly don't feel were positive at the time. Calvin, who we'll talk about too in the second half, I mean, he was pretty angry and frightened by this whole thing. I suppose one view of it is whoever these visitors are, it's for your own good. We're going to get into that on the other side of this. And then there's some big picture stuff about who they might be and where they're from.